On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to try to answer these questions. Is De'Aaron Fox a better trade acquisition than Jimmy Butler this February 6th trade deadline? And is Keon Ellis a better fit for the Sacramento Kings and the reason why they have been on such a roll without Mike Brown? That and more coming up right now. I'm Tom Haberstroh, and welcome to The Big Number. Every week we do this on Thursday. We're going to tell you one big deep dive on a story in the NBA, a player, a trend, with my man Dan Devine. Drops every Thursday right here at Yahoo Sports. Go subscribe, tell your friends, hit that subscribe, share, like button. Go give us a review, tell your friends, tell your family members. And Dan, I want to tell you, what's up, buddy? How you doing?
I'm doing great, Tom. Happy New Year to you and happy New Year to all our little numbers out there. I'm coming to you once again live, rough, rugged, and raw from the New York City studios of Yahoo Sports. Got the whole city behind me. I got you in front of me. Let's put up some numbers. What do we got today?
We got a really small number, a little bit of a negative number here this week. It's on the Sacramento Kings, which fire up Sacramento Kings. They're on a roll here, but one guy not on a roll. This week's big number is minus 5.2. We're going negative this week, Dan. That's De'Aaron Fox on-off split this season, meaning that the Sacramento Kings are 5.2 points per 100 possessions worse with De'Aaron Fox, one-time All-Star De'Aaron Fox on the floor. That is staggering. Among players who have been named to an All-Star in the last three seasons that have played 1,000 minutes this season, there are 29 players who fit that criteria of being an All-Star in the past three seasons and playing at least 1,000 minutes. It's like the cream of the crop in the NBA. That minus 5.2 on-off split is 28th out of 29. And that's a very, very big deal right now because, Dan, the Kangs are Kangsing, but in like a good way. And the last two games, De'Aaron Fox has not played and they've been awesome, especially when it comes to Keon Ellis, who has been inserted into this starting lineup and doing everything from the point guard position. DeMar DeRozan looks better. Domantas Sabonis looks better. Everything starts to look better without De'Aaron Fox, who, by the way, has not signed an extension with the Sacramento Kings. His agent, Rich Paul, visiting with the front office. And then short time after that, whether it's connected or not, Mike Brown is let go. Very ominous things happening around the Sacramento Kings. But right now, the good news is also putting this kind of cloud around De'Aaron Fox. He can be a free agent next summer. And without that extension, I think all of these trade talks around Jimmy Butler, that's going to take the forefront. That's going to take the front burner. But on the back burner here is this De'Aaron Fox situation where they've done better without him over the last couple of games and over across the season. They've been okay with De'Aaron Fox in the lineup, but his defense has slid this season after leading the league in steals per game last year and being named the most clutch player in the NBA 3 years ago and an All-Star. De'Aaron Fox has taken a little bit of a slide this year, Dan, and I think it's a very big story in the league, obviously, when it comes to Mike Brown and the Sacramento Kings potentially shuffling their lineup with DeMar DeRozan. But if you're not going to get Jimmy Butler, I think you can turn your eyes over to De'Aaron Fox, who's one of the better point guards in the league and at his best. He is a stud point guard who's going to carry you to victories offensively, a guy who can get you 50 points a few times a season. That's how good he is as a three-level scorer. But De'Aaron Fox, is he a number one on a championship team? I don't think so. Is he number two or three? Probably. And when you're an NBA team looking for a star player, he might be the biggest fish on the market if Jimmy Butler can't find a landing spot. So, Dan Devine, I'm sitting here and asking you, do you think the Sacramento Kings should keep De'Aaron Fox through this trade deadline? Or do you think that minus 5.2 on-off swing is indicative of a team that should move off of De'Aaron Fox and get some better replacements that fit better with this team that can raise that floor and raise that ceiling behind DeMar DeRozan, Domantas Sabonis, and of course, Keon Ellis, who's been looking like a star out there.
Listen, you're not going to get any argument from me about Keon Ellis. We'll get more into some of the little numbers later with Keon Ellis, but there's been a rough patch of road in Sacramento this season, and a team that has, it's built around multiple guys who might not be like the number one star, but they all sort of fit together. But then how do they fit together? There was some success a couple of seasons ago, but then adding a new piece in made it more difficult to figure it all out. I think about Minnesota, and I think about how some problems got solved in Minnesota, but then new problems arose financially. And so the answer to it was trade away Karl Anthony Towns. And now there's new problems, right? And so in Sacramento, Sacramento doesn't necessarily get to shop at the top of the free agent market. You can't get whatever superstar you want all the time in Sacramento. So if you got like an all NBA caliber player who has, you know, been clutch player of the year and led you to, oh, by the way, the first playoff appearance in 16 years, 2 years ago, and is even now in a rocky and down season, still averaging like just under 27 points and 6 assists per game. Like the numbers are still there. The production's still there. The talent's still there. I would be a little bit reluctant to jump ahead of the things going too wrong that we got to get rid of De'Aaron Fox. Minus 5.2 this year, but in the years past, it was plus nine last season, plus 3 the year before that. We've seen De'Aaron Fox have a meaningful impact on winning in Sacramento the last couple of seasons. I think it might be reasonable to look at it and say there might be some other stuff going on or some other factors leading into why things have been a little bit shakier in Sacramento. And also the possibility, and we could talk about this a little bit later, that what's up in Sacramento might be a little bit more noise than signal. I'm wondering a little bit about whether the Kings, as presently constituted, might be a little bit better than 18 and 19, and whether some of what we've seen in the early season, that this shakiness that cost Mike Brown his job, might be something that might level out a little bit. But that's me being bullish on Fox as a prospect, as a star player, as somebody that if you're the Kings, you might come to regret making the choice to come off of him too quickly. I'm guessing that you might be a little bit more reticent about that, though. You might be a little bit more willing to go see what you could do. What do you think Sacramento could actually do if they did decide to get into the De'Aaron Fox on the market business?
Yeah, I look at teams like San Antonio. I look at teams like Houston. I don't know if he's the best fit in Golden State. You know, there's always ties between Sacramento and Golden State. I just think that when you look at De'Aaron Fox and Brooklyn too, if they want to kind of restart things in Brooklyn with De'Aaron Fox and just surround him with shooting in ways that Sacramento has really struggled to do, maybe you get a better, more downhill De'Aaron Fox, a guy who, if you build an offense around him that has spacing, maybe you just get a much healthier offensive game than what Fox is showing. And look, Fox isn't a knockdown shooter in ways that I think is a little problematic in today's NBA. When you have a point guard who is shooting 33% from downtown for his career, this year he's shooting about under 30% over his last month from downtown. It's really hard to construct a top five offense in the NBA when your point guard, your lead playmaker, is not able to be a strong threat in that pick and roll where you're hitting shots if they go under on screens. It's really difficult to be having plus to possessions when you don't have that guy being a knockdown shooter. Maybe he does that in a more, I guess, healthier spread offense. But when you look at this Kings team, it just feels like the numbers are showing it's DeMar DeRozan and Domantas Sabonis and Keon Ellis when they are on the floor without De'Aaron Fox. What's fascinating about this team, Malik Monk in there too, when De'Aaron Fox, DeMar DeRozan, and Domantas Sabonis are on the floor without Keon Ellis, they have a minus 1.9 net rating. But if you put in Keon Ellis and you take out De'Aaron Fox out of that equation, in 202 minutes this season, according to PBPstats.com, the Kings' net rating goes from minus 1.9 to plus 19. So it is pretty stark numbers. And it might just go to the impact of Keon Ellis and what he brings to the table compared to De'Aaron Fox, who, as Mike Brown has pointed out many, many times, has a bit of a focus issue sometimes, not really doing defensively what they need to have happen. Of course, the clutch mistake there at the end, right before Mike Brown got let go. This is kind of an issue for the Kings, is that they need to be better defensively. And so much of this season is on spot up opportunities or guys who are kicking out. De'Aaron Fox gets lost sometimes defensively. That doesn't happen with Keon Ellis. This guy reminds me of a young Jimmy Butler in that he is a dog. He's a guy who's going out there playing so hard, and 48 minutes the other night, and Doug Christie's out there just like gassing this guy up, loving Keon Ellis. And Malik Monk saying to the press after 12 assists against Golden State, Doug Christie's telling reporters that he's playing as free as he's ever seen him. Keon Ellis telling about Doug Christie saying he's giving me more rope than I had previously. And I think there's just a lot of vibes here that make De'Aaron Fox, in my opinion, more likely to move at the deadline than stay.
Wow.
I think it's just a situation where Sacramento likes what they're seeing right here, and they make a coaching change. And I do think that De'Aaron Fox at the trade deadline is going to be a lot more interesting, or a hotter name than what we're seeing right now. So there's lots to get into here, Dan. Lots to get into. And I think right after the break, I'd like to hear these four little numbers that you got cooked up for me, if you're cool with that. Yeah?
I'm cool with that. Before we go, though, I just want to pour a little bit of this cold water on what you just said. They might be loving what they're seeing in Sacramento right now. They've also seen the Mavericks minus Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving in this win streak, the 76ers without Joel Embiid in this win streak, the Memphis Grizzlies without Ja Morant in this win streak, the Warriors just... You know, the Warriors are in their own sort of dismal spiral right now. So Steph and Draymond played. Doesn't seem to matter. Nothing seems to matter for the Warriors right now. And then the Miami Heat without Keon Ellis 1.0, Jimmy Butler. So there is the dead cat bounce component to the Mike Brown dismissal and the Doug Christie takeover. I can't believe in 2025 we were talking about the Doug Christie takeover. I thought I left that behind with like end one oversized shirts and Jenko jeans, but here we are. And there's also just, you've played some teams that have been, you know, walking wounded a little bit. So the Kings are moving in the positive direction, and we're going to get into some of that with the little numbers right after this.
Did you also skip out on recess to go nerd out with your math teacher and hang out with the math nerds? No?
I didn't, but I was playing Magic the Gathering, so it's not a lot better.
This is our show. Yes, yes, yes. We got to go four little numbers, and I want to hear your first little number about the Sacramento Kings and this De'Aaron Fox situation. What do you got?
Well, first little number has to do with the guy that evidently you want to run De'Aaron Fox out of town on a rail to replace him with. 8.9 is our first little number today. That is how many steals, blocks, and deflections per 36 minutes Keon Ellis is producing this season. Nearly 9 possessions per 36. He's ending with a deflection, a steal, or a blocked shot. That's a pretty monstrous number, and it tracks with his defensive production last season. He sort of got into the rotation under Mike Brown like a little bit at a time. 6.8 per 36, all told, for the full year. He got into the starting lineup in March. Remember, Kevin Huerter had a shoulder injury, went out for the remainder of the season. Ellis goes into the starting lineup, 7.6 combined steals, blocks, deflections per 36 after he got into the starting lineup in March. What we're saying here is Keon Ellis is a defensive event creator, a havoc wreaker, a S stirrer. I'm not going to curse here in the work studio. He is somebody who goes on, it can be a point of attack demon. He can be an off-ball playmaker. You can put him on point guards. You can put him on opposing bigger wings. He's not a huge guy, I think like 6'4", but has a big wingspan, can play up, can be a tight coverage player out on the perimeter. And the Sacramento Kings, you mentioned some of the defensive issues that they've had. The Kings have not been a defensive quality defensive team for basically, you know, we mentioned some of those things from our childhood, basically going back to that far. I think Rick Adelman was the coach the last time the Kings had an above average defense. And that's a long, long time ago. Keon Ellis is the kind of guy that can get you closer to that. He's also like, I think there's a lot to like about him. He's also not really a one-way player. Somebody who is I think he's shooting 41.7% on three-pointers. He's got a positive assist-to-turnover ratio. He's not a, you know, De'Aaron Fox, very, you know, on-the-ball playmaker, three-level scorer, a guy who is going to take up a lot of possessions. Keon Ellis is a little bit more get in where he fits in, sort of rising tide lifts all boats. Our pal Tom Ziller had compared him a little bit to Josh Hart as somebody who like isn't a, you know, he might not be a dominant player, but like he kind of, he makes positive things happen wherever he is. What's your impression about how Ellis is impacting the game for Sacramento? And do you think there's a, even if we don't have a Fox trade, do you think there's a case for keeping him in the starting lineup, even if it means moving Malik Monk back to the bench?
I like this look. And now you got Devin Carter in the mix. Like, I think this team can have a really strong defensive backcourt like that. Boom. You got Keon Ellis and Devin Carter, who's a rookie who is dealing with a shoulder injury. Anthony Carter's son. I love these second generation players where their father played in the NBA and they just seem to overachieve in the league depending on where they were drafted. I did a big story about this for Yahoo Sports during the draft time where continually we see guys like Domantas Sabonis, by the way, they get drafted and they always overperform their draft slot. And I think the similar thing with Devin Carter is like Keon Ellis and Devin Carter are cut from the same cloth. These guys are just, they get after it. And when you have Domantas Sabonis, who can be the fulcrum of your offense, and DeMar DeRozan, who's as good of a go-to one-on-one scorer as you'll find in the NBA, I don't think you need a lot from your backcourt in terms of shot creation. You need guys who can hit shots. De'Aaron Fox this season, 31% on catch-and-shoot threes. Keon Ellis, north of 40%. That's what you want if you got a team with DeMar DeRozan and Domantas Sabonis. You need knockdown shooters and defenders. And those two guys, Keon Ellis and Devin Carter, I think fit the bill. So do I think that, you know, De'Aaron Fox, net-net, is a better player than Keon Ellis? Certainly, I do. Sure. But so much of basketball and so much of what the Kings need is fit. And DeMar DeRozan is in town, and he's the clutch go-to guy. Malik Monk is in town. He's a clutch go-to guy. I just feel like on this team, De'Aaron Fox feels a little bit redundant in ways that maybe 2 years ago he wasn't.
I'm not sure that I'm going to go all the way there with you, but I do love the impact that Keon Ellis has had, which we're going to go to a little quick mini game here. You mentioned for today's big number, Basketball Reference has the Kings as being 5.2 points per 100 possessions better with Fox off the floor than on it. Total role reversal with Keon Ellis, 14.2 points per 100 better with him on it than off it, by far the biggest swing on the team. You look at cleaning the glass, as we love to look at, strips out garbage time numbers.
Yep.
Over there, outside of garbage time, the on-off split for Keon Ellis, and even 15 points per 100, that is the eighth biggest differential among all players that have played 500 minutes this season. Eighth among all players that have played 500 minutes. Tom Haberstroh, I want you to try to name as many of the top seven as you can. So who is above Keon Ellis's plus 15 points per 100 on cleaningtheglass.com?
All right, first one, Nikola Jokic. It's got to be.
Bang, number one with the bullet. He's the top of the list, 29.6. So he's like two Keon Ellis's. It's like Keon Ellis on Keon Ellis's shoulders in a trench coat, and you shave their heads, and it's Nikola Jokic.
And I still wouldn't take that guy over one of Jokic's brothers. I'm going to go with, on the second one, I'll go with our guy, Steph Curry, that we said on this show, best offensive player since Michael Jordan. Is Stephen Curry on that list?
He's close, but no cigar. Plus 14 for Steph. So,
oh, just, come on.
Just
come
south
on.
Of the Keon Ellis zone.
What about the guy that I said was going to be the MVP before the season and is coming for all the worlds right now? Victor Wembanyama. Where is he on this list?
Just south. He is 10th, 14.7. You're getting closer. Keon Ellis, the on-off split's bigger than Victor Wembanyama and Stephen Curry.
All right, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, come on.
Got it, plus 15.1. So they got two of the seven. And I got to be honest with you, my brother, I don't know that you're going to get the other five. Do you want me to just run through them?
Well, I know Christian Brown, he's always next to Jokic, but I don't know if this kind of offsets that. Is Christian Brown on here?
He's next to another big guy. He's next to Victor Wembanyama at 14.7. So he's just south of this list.
All right, give me the rest of it. Is Evan Mobley on this list?
He is not. I gotta scroll for him. So he's not that close. So very good. I think he's probably going to make his first All-Star team. Wrote about first-time All-Stars at YahooSports.com. Go check that out. Number two, Herb Jones in New Orleans, plus 19.8. Andrew Nembhard in Indiana, number three, plus 17.7. So I think the what we're learning there is those teams really kind of suck when those guys aren't there. It's less about, I mean, they're important, but it's also just what's behind them. Chris Paul, number four, plus 17.1. That, you know, we've talked about that in the Wembanyama, like the Wembanyama episode of The Big Number, the rising tide there for Wemby. Jalen Johnson in Atlanta also might be a first-time All-Star this season, plus 16.8. Dorian Finney-Smith, trade season's legend, plus 15.5 in Brooklyn, and SGA at 15.1. That's it. So you're talking about two MVP candidates, a couple of guys where they are the linchpins of their wing defensive teams. Then when they're not there, their teams just give away the store. Chris Paul and Jalen Johnson and Dorian Finney-Smith. Not bad company for Keon Ellis to be in, although you wonder if as he plays more minutes and maybe, I guess, replaces De'Aaron Fox, that number would go down. But certainly a huge impact for the Sacramento Kings thus far, as goes into that plus that 8.9 number for the impact he's making on the defensive end. Let's move off of Keon Ellis to another player who's having a tougher run of it in Sacramento this season. 0.513, so 51.3%. That is Keegan Murray's true shooting percentage this season. And if you are not familiar with true shooting percentage, it is a way to measure shooting accuracy on two-pointers, three-pointers, and free throws. So kind of all your shooting all rolled up into one. And on one let, you think, oh, 51.3, that's better than half. Sounds decent. Not so much, my friend. Out of 163 players who've played at least 750 minutes this season, Keegan Murray's 51.3 is 154th, bottom 10 among that group. So that's a problem. And it's definitely not what the Kings thought they were getting with Keegan Murray when they drafted him fourth overall. He comes in, he becomes the rookie all-time rookie leader in three-pointers as a rookie. Plug-and-play starter on a playoff team, but the offensive game has kind of deteriorated as represented by his three-point shot in specific, but not creating and knocking down shots at a high level. So what do you make of Keegan Murray at this stage in his development, of the downturn that he's experienced? And do you think he's still sort of part of the long-term solution here in Sacramento, or maybe more part of the problem?
What a fascinating story he has. Just coming into the league and instantly becoming like a starter on a playoff team. And that you just rarely see that in the NBA, that a rookie can have that kind of high impact as a 3-and-D guy. But he was that for the Sacramento Kings under Mike Brown. In Keegan Murray's last two games, shooting 7 of 14 from downtown. He's not a high-volume free-throw guy. He's a guy who's going to spot up from the corners, play a little DHO. He's not necessarily going to go downhill and get to the free-throw line. So that true shooting percentage is really coming out of those high-percentage shots from the floor. And you're hoping that he has a little bit of a Victor Wembanyama turnaround, where it's like, hey, man, where's that jump shot? We saw so much of it a little bit ago. Where did that go? How can you reclaim that jump shot that was so good earlier? And maybe he has. Maybe he has it under Doug Christie. And this kind of energy that we're seeing from the team is going to boost up Keegan Murray. I do think we need to see a little bit more sustained shooting for me to believe that he's a core member of this Sacramento Kings franchise, or at least get back to where he was his rookie season. And what you're pointing to is a guy that kind of has plateaued. And maybe that's one of the reasons why Mike Brown was let go, is they just aren't seeing the sort of development that you were expecting after such a great start to his career. But to John Hollinger's credit, he wrote a great story at The Athletic talking about the curse of Coach of the Year is really just the story of unreasonable expectations. And I think Keegan Murray is a great example of that, is if he doesn't have such a great rookie season, maybe we aren't talking about him plateauing. Instead, we're talking about him as incrementally getting better. But because he started so high, we have no choice but to look at that decline rather than saying, you know what, Keegan Murray in year three of his career, not a bad player. A pretty solid contributor for the Sacramento Kings. But unfortunately, we do have that unfair expectations on a guy like Keegan, who came out so hot in his career.
It makes a ton of sense. And there's also the component of, you are tasked with suddenly becoming your team's best perimeter defender because there kind of isn't another option, right? Like, you know, you're everyone's looking for who can get a stop, who can guard another big wing, who can guard an opponent's top perimeter scorer. And on a team where Domantas Sabonis is not a great rim protector, where De'Aaron Fox, as we mentioned, can be sort of touch and go with his point of attack defense, where Keon Ellis wasn't really playing, where Malik Monk has his moments, or Kevin Herter's not necessarily there. There really aren't great. And DeMar DeRozan is, you know, has size and he'll be smart and he'll battle, but not exactly a lockdown guy and never has been. Keegan Murray almost by default has been kind of shoved into that role. And you do wonder a little bit if being the only real plus defender in that unit and having to deal with the toughest assignments every night has sort of sapped his offensive game a little bit, which then, to your point, like if Keon Ellis is in that lineup and now you're sharing that defensive responsibility a little more, or maybe it's not quite as important for you to be the number one guy, maybe, you know, that opens up a little more energy for him on the offensive end. He's also, I think, some foot and ankle issues the last few weeks. So maybe on the other side of that, the shot comes back around. We certainly would love to see that for Keegan Murray. Our third little number today, 14.6%. That is the share of the Sacramento Kings' offensive possessions that have come in transition this season, according to Cleaning the Glass. That is 24th in the NBA. And that is pretty surprising considering what we think of when we think of the light the beam Kings turnaround, right? Yep. It was hit the gas. It was Fox up tempo. It was Monk in transition. We are getting stuff away when we create turnovers or we get a rebound. We are pushing it and we are slamming on the gas. 2 years ago during that playoff run, 17.2% transition frequency, third in the NBA. Last season, 16.0%, fifth in the NBA. This season, 14.6%, 24th in the NBA. So, Tom, to what do you attribute the Kings slowing down this season? And do you see any hope for them slamming the pedal down again under Christie?
I think it's DeMar DeRozan, man.
Mm.
I think that's what it is. It's like when you look at this team, I think a lot of it is they brought in DeMar DeRozan and De'Aaron Fox. You know, he didn't sign that extension. And a lot of the talk around that extension, why he didn't do it, is because he wants to ensure that this organization is making big time acquisitions or being a championship level operation. And I can't help but connect the dots and be like, De'Aaron Fox isn't just thrilled about playing with DeMar DeRozan. And when you look at the Chicago Bulls and what they're doing this year compared to last year they're 28th in pace. This year they're top three. That's interesting. You know, I think that the texture of the team changes with DeMar DeRozan, but also the speed of the team changes with DeMar DeRozan. And he's not Toronto Raptors DeMar DeRozan, right? He's getting up there in age. And when you're talking about DeMar DeRozan in the half court, that's where he excels, is a guy who wants to slow things down and kind of methodically beat you in one-on-one situations or getting into that mid-range where he's so money. And at this age, when this guy is 35 years old, I'm not so sure running up and down is where you want to be, which is the same problem that I have with Jimmy Butler and thinking about Memphis or teams that want to get up and down on the floor. I just don't think at this stage of their careers, they want to do it. And so I think probably De'Aaron Fox excels in a more up-tempo offense, but not if DeMar DeRozan's on the team.
It makes a lot of sense, and it was certainly one of the concerns that I think a lot of people raised about the deal when it happened. It's that push and pull of, as we mentioned earlier, Sacramento can't necessarily always get exactly the perfect guy it might want at the top of the market. So you get the talent where you can get it. And the idea of DeMar DeRozan coming in to be sort of a clutch time answer for a team that had fallen off in that regard last season, it makes a lot of sense. Like another guy who can create a shot, so it's not all on Fox or Monk. But yeah, it does shift your shot profile. And that's something that's been kind of an ongoing issue for the Kings over the last couple of seasons. They were like a top 10 team in terms of their shot profile 2 years ago, where like where you get your shots, how often you're shooting at the rim, how often you're shooting from mid-range, how often you're shooting threes. Shots at the rim and threes, generally speaking, better. Shots from mid-range, less so because the points per shot are lower. And this season, their location effective field goal percentage from Cleaning the Glass, dead last. They are taking, I think they're 29th in shots at the rim. They are 24th or 25th in shots from three-point range. And guess where they are for mid-range, Tom, now that they brought DeMar DeRozan in?
Right at the top. Yep.
Number one. League average in terms of share of shots from mid-range is 29.3%. The Sacramento Kings, 39.4%. 10% above league average in terms of the shots from mid-range. Actually, come to think of it, it's kind of a miracle that they're a top 10 offense, given what they're, you know, where they're taking their shots from. And that kind of gets me to the number, the fourth little number here. It's negative 2.8. And that is the gap between the Kings' expected win total thus far and their actual win total. It's a little heady, so we'll get into this. Stripping out those garbage time numbers, the Kings have outscored their opponents by 2.1 points per 100 possessions this year. That point differential, you'd expect a team that's played as many games as Sacramento to be 21-16, 21 win team. A 21-16 record would have the Kings tied for fifth in the West. Instead, they're 18-19, 11th in the West. So that minus 2.8, that roughly minus three, that's the differential between what you'd expect their point differential to be to turn into wins and where their actual record is. And some of that, it's like, how do you account for that? It's some of that is they are not generating the best shots that they could. Even they're outperforming the shots that they are getting, but they're not generating the highest level offense. Another place is clutch time. And so we know that I have some more numbers we can dig into here a little bit, but given what we know about under like volatile small samples like crunch time, where the Kings are underperforming so far, and we can get into that, how much of the Kings' problems so far this year do you think are like endemic to the way it's all built and the structure of it? And how much of it might be like the coins landed on tails a few more times than you'd expect? And this is closer to a 21-16 team than an under 500 team that might need to trade a superstar.
I remember one time I was walking through the Bellagio with my brother, and he saw that a roulette table had 10 straight red, hit red 10 straight times. And he's like, it's hot, I'm going red. And he puts down a $100 bill on the table. And I'm like, what are you doing? No, don't do that. They're all independent. This is not necessarily an indication that it's hot. It is not. These are independent turns on the wheel. And he goes, watch this. Dan, what color did it turn up?
I would love to say red.
It is red. Yeah, it went red.
Yeah, right.
And that's why he's my big brother and I'm the little brother. And that's ultimately what I think of is like in this situation where we can say, hey, these are all independent lucky bounces or unlucky bounces in the case of the Sacramento Kings. What if there is something that we think is just random, but it is endemic that maybe moving head coaches, maybe this looseness that you're seeing among the players and then what they're saying after these games, maybe there is something that they're playing a little tight. Maybe it is something where De'Aaron Fox checking out on last second possessions in the worst way possible is kind of a residue of a mindset where it's like, I'm not all in, I'm not locked in. And so maybe the Doug Christie coaching change is a last ditch effort to see if that clutch performance or underperformance is really independent, just bad luck, or if it is something that is systemic, that they have to shake things up. And I wonder, I'm just wondering, throwing it out there, whether some of this strong play from Malik Monk and Keon Ellis and the rest of the squad, I don't know, is De'Aaron Fox returning to the team? Is it going to raise that and make them a better clutch team? Or is that kind of juju, that energy of De'Aaron Fox, is that going to kind of sap things a little bit? I'm very, very interested to see how this plays out because, like, I know it's a soft schedule. And I know that, like, hey, man, Keon Ellis had 14 deflections in the Miami Heat game. Like, how many times can we duplicate that? 14 times. Does he have the energy to do this? We said that about Josh Hart, and we said that about Jimmy Butler, and maybe he is that second coming that we can expect what we're seeing recently to continue, and that hot streak might be just around the corner.
Well, just, you know, the I'll give you the reason to believe that the things that have broken against him could break in a positive way. So whether that's with De'Aaron Fox, without De'Aaron Fox, the Kings are 2-6 in games decided by three or fewer points. They're 9-13 in games that were within 5 points in the final 5 minutes. They have one of the worst clutch records in the league, despite having a top six clutch point differential. They're plus 11.5 points per 100 possessions in the clutch, and yet they're under 500 in the clutch. They have lost, by my count, 5 games where they led were tied or had a chance to tie in the final 10 seconds. So, like, these are real thin margins. And maybe, yep, to your point, this is less random chance and more, if bad things are happening to you over and over again, there might be a reason for it. But maybe the glass half full take here, you know, maybe the roulette wheel will keep spinning, is we've seen a team that's like eighth on offense or seventh or eighth on offense, depending on which site you look at, roughly league average on defense, top 10-ish point differential, and maybe they will play to that more regularly over the second half of the season. And if they do that, I'm not saying it's going to make them into world-beating title contenders, but if you are closer to top five, top six in the West than you are to 11th, 12th, 13th, that's a meaningful jump. And in a conference as sort of tightly congested in the middle class, like there's OKC and there's kind of everybody else, but it's really, it's OKC, it's Houston and Memphis, and then it's kind of everybody else right now. And if you're able to reverse a couple of those options, a couple of those, last second fouls, the last second shot that rims out, the last second buzzer beater that goes at you, that sort of stuff, maybe that we're talking about a very different team and a very different set of circumstances.
Yeah. And I'm hoping that I get a little bit more luck on the big number scoreboard on the over under tally that I just refreshed a little bit ago. I've got the results of how we're doing on it, telling the future, fortune telling on this show. Turns out I'm going to need that roulette wheel to go in my favor. Just
Ooh,
a little tease there.
I love to hear that, Tom Haberstroh.
All right, Dan, we did a lot on De'Aaron Fox and what's ailing the Sacramento Kings, and maybe they just need a little bit luck going their way. Now it's time for me to try to get some of that juju over on my side, because I refreshed the numbers, and as much as I am going to get excited about the fact that Jamal Murray, a little bit of a cold streak here, we said the over-under on Jamal Murray was 50% effective field goal percentage. You chose the over, I chose the under. He is now at 49.8. A little sliver below 50. So thank you, Jamal Murray, for making me a tiny bit smart, but it's not really the whole story here because, just tallied everything up. You're winning 14 to 12. You've hit on 14 of these over-unders this season, and I have only gotten 12. Zach Edey, his entrance into the over-under scoreboard. Look, he's back from his concussion, but he still has not gotten over the double-double mark that we projected in the over-under. We both took the under on that. I took the under on 4.5 fouls per 36. He's at 4.6. You took the over on that, and he is making you look very smart. But I want to talk about this guy, Victor Wembanyama. I wrote for Yahoo Sports on Wednesday ahead of that big, big game against Giannis on ESPN that he is one of one. He is the next face of the league, and not just the next, he is now. Believe it or not, he, since November 9th, Dan, he is shooting 39.8% from downtown, and he is making 4 three-pointers per game over the last 2 months. Okay. There is only one player who has averaged more three-pointers made per game in the Western Conference, and you guessed it, it is Stephen Curry. If you want to learn more about Victor Wembanyama and how insane he is, both ends of the floor, the shot blocking, I call it the Wemby list, all the players in the NBA that have been blocked by Victor Wembanyama, and the list is 182 players' names long.
Oh, my goodness.
Go check out that article on Yahoo Sports, and also check out, Dan, you've got 9 first-time All-Star candidates. Any that you want to hit here that you want the listeners to I'm just trying to distract people from your lead of 14 to 12. Do you have any All-Stars you want to give a shout-out to, or any factoids that you want to plug a little bit while listeners hear about me closing that 14 to 12 gap?
Well, first off, I think we both know that's not going to happen. I'm going to stay on top forever. This is me sailing off into the sunset on my boat that says the SS live forever. Wemby certainly on that list. Evan Mobley, the numbers are not as dramatic, but I think the fact that the Cavs are so off to such an incredible start and he has become a legit three-point shooter, I think that was like the thing that everybody was – looking for out of him. He's shooting just under 42% from three this season, and he's like doubled his three-point attempt rate. So Evan Mobley, a version of that can play the four or the five, that can stretch the floor, that can be face-up hub. I don't know. I'm into Jalen Williams on the Thunder. I'm a big fan of J-Dub. I wouldn't say I was early on it, but wrote about him in kind of a big way last season at Yahoo Sports.
Yep.
Here's a fun one. He's one of six players in the NBA averaging at least 20 points, five rebounds, five assists, and a steal and a half a game. Six guys. He's one of them. SGA, Jokic. So two MVP candidates. Franz Wagner, who would have been an all-star if not for his injuries. And who knows, maybe he'll still make it. Luka, who would probably be an MVP candidate if not for missing games due to injuries. And James Harden, who, even though he can't shoot anymore, is still James Harden. So, like, those are the guys. And then J-Dub's there as the number two option, who's also been, like, a small ball center and an on-ball point guard defender. Like, he can do a little bit of everything, and he's doing an awful lot of it. And he's an awful lot of fun to watch and to listen to. He's a smart, fun interview. So I think those guys are people, too, who are worth watching and also worth reading about at Yahoo Sports. Come on, go time on site. We want you to click on it and then just stay there. Go do some other stuff. That's fine. But get onto the website. That's the main thing I want you to take away from this today. Also, that I'm up 14 to 12 on time. I don't know if we mentioned that.
Yeah, let's not mention that again. 24 hours in a day. The next week's big number is going to be 24.
That's right.
Our audience average time spent on Yahoo Sports.
That's exactly
in the
right.
Next week. I want to see those numbers. I want you to take those screen time numbers on your phone that gives you instant panic on Sundays and just say, like, hey, how much of that time is spent on Yahoo Sports portals? Go do it. Go do it. That's
exactly
what we
right.
want next week on the big number is your screen time on Yahoo Sports. You know what?
Send all of your screenshots to us of your screen time at Kevin O'Connor NBA. Just hit us with all of them.
Yes, please. Send him all those emails. Please fill up his inbox with all of those screen times. Look, Emmy, I appreciate you sitting through this hour on this show. I thank you for all your help on this Wednesday that we're taping this. Coming out every Thursday on the big number. Thanks to everybody who's working behind the scenes to make this happen. Go subscribe on YouTube, wherever you get your podcast. Leave us a rating. Leave us a review. Don't make a review that says 14 stars, because that is the lead that Dan Devine has on me. 14 hits and I only have 12. We're not going to mention it again. We'll
Never
be back
again.
Next week with another episode of the big number that I've already said is 24. Dan, have a great weekend.
You too, my man.